Life isn't about avoiding the bruises. It's about collecting the scars to prove that we showed up for it. Join Nikki Seberini for the next hour as she explores heroism through illness. There is a warrior inside each of us. This is LifeLinks with the DL Link. LifeLinks is a funding initiative of the DL Link.
Well, welcome, and a very, very good afternoon to you. This is the DL Link Show, where we connect you through insights and information and illumination here on 101.9 High FM. Nikki Seberini with you. Such a beautiful song. Look for the good in everyone. And I suppose it's not just a theory, right? We got to really apply it and really live it and be it. As difficult as it may be sometimes. So that's why we love to bring you inspiration, inspirational story, and inspirational people, because it gets us to connect with the beautiful, good, kind, amazing part of ourselves. Because our first guest, this is a true story of grit and determination and resilience. And I don't know what other adjectives to use, but Alexis Kalyanis is just really, she gives really new meaning to the world, a word, cancer survivor. So Alexis, welcome. Thank you very, very much for joining us. It's lovely to have you on the show.
Thank you for having me.
So Alexis, I have to get this right. It's Kalyanis.
Kalyanis, if it's anglicized, but otherwise in Greek, it's Kalyani. It just means good John, really. It's a terrible
Kalyani. Thing. What does it mean?
Good John.
Good John.
That's terrible when you translate.
All right, well, we'll move on. Because I, as I was saying, you know, just reading your story, Alexis, and I start off and I say, you know, going out there and being a good person, I think it starts with being grateful. I think it starts with connecting with how incredible we can be as human beings, and also how what people go through and what people overcome. And this is really your story. I mean, let's go back to 2006. Let's go all the way back, because you've got a long cancer journey. I mean, I think you're 39 years old now, Alexis. Am I correct?
Yes, that's correct.
But your cancer journey began all the way in 2006. Tell us about this diagnosis of this rare childhood liver cancer. And if you can just tell us where it started.
Well, apparently when a tumor grows in the liver, in the type of liver cancer I had, it only takes on the left lobe of the liver, but it takes a long time to grow. And then as soon as it's kind of reached its limit, then the moment it's in your body, out of the liver, it's stage 4. So when I was 20, I probably already had it growing for about 2 or 3 years. Uh-huh. And I was very sick, but also I was only 20. I'd never actually gone to hospital for anything. I don't even think I visited a GP in my life. So I just didn't know that there was anything wrong. So I really left it till it was really quite far gone. But luckily, so I had an operation. I had an amazing doctor. I don't want to mention any doctor's names, but he really is, he's fantastic. And he's also operated on my kidney and my ovaries. But then I found out after just having my operation, about 6 months later, I actually had to start chemo, which was an 8-year journey. I think I was on 15 different chemos. But the most important thing I did during that time from 20 to 28 is I studied. I studied a lot. So I still got my degrees and I still kind of pushed on. But I think also I don't really know what it's like to not have cancer, because I've basically had it for half my life. So I think for me, I accepted quite easily, where it was something really hard to accept.
Wow. Alexis, I'm just going to ask Craig to have a quick break because I'm coughing and I want to come back to you and I want to be able to speak. Craig, okay. Quick break.
High FM, your station of choice since 2008.
Oh my goodness, I have to apologize. I don't know what happened to me. 1 minute I was here and the next minute I had something in my throat, and it still seems to be there, Alexis. But I just want to say, I mean, at this young age being diagnosed, you hadn't been to the doctor much before then. This must have been such a shock to your system, and then knowing that you had to be on this 8-year chemotherapy journey. Did you know that it was going to be 8 years? And what was the doctor telling you at the time?
Well, actually, so I think I'm one of the only survivors of my cancer in South Africa. And at the time, if the doctor had told me how awful the liver op would be, I don't think I would have had it. But anyway, because it was an op, so it was almost like cancer here today, cancer gone tomorrow, I felt good about it. But then when I found out I had to do chemo, and I found a few different oncologists, and the one oncologist said, no, he'll give me morphine, and I've got 9 months to live. And then other oncologists wanted to send me to trials in Austria or America. And then I found this amazing doctor, and he's still my oncologist to this day. And he never gave me a time period. But what he also didn't know how long I'd have to be on chemo. But the one thing is, when your body starts rejecting the chemo, you can't use that chemo anymore. So I had to keep trying a stronger, I'd say, I actually tell everyone, the worse the chemo gets, or the more one chemo doesn't work and you have to go to the next, they get worse and worse for your body. They become very toxic. So at the end of my chemo journey, I did ask the doctor, how long did you think I would live? And he said, I thought I was going to walk you down West Park Cemetery after 2 years, which would have made me 22. So I've really kind of carried on going, but I've had a lot of hiccups along the road, but I do accept it. And of course, I have days where I'm in shock and I cry, but I think I'm out of the woods, because I'm now on immunotherapy, which I've been on for 2 years, with not too many bad side effects. I mean, there is the slight hair loss, but it's not quite common. And also, I work just like a normal person. My office, everyone is so understanding. I actually started working for them last year, so they knew already before they hired me about the diagnosis. And they have been so kind. They're a complete family, and they treat me like any normal person, which is actually what I want. I don't want to be treated as though I'm frail, or, you know, that I need that victim card. You just have to keep on going.
Absolutely. Yeah, no, absolutely. Mm-hmm. I just want to go back, Alexis. You mentioned all of these three different oncologists giving you three different bits of advice. I mean, mm-hmm. The one talking about morphine, you've got 9 months and then you're going to pass away, et cetera, et cetera.
I remember the oncologist that said I had 9 months to live. He actually called me the patient in front of my parents. I didn't even have a name to him. And I thought, I can't die now. I don't even have a degree yet.
I love that. I mean, to be told that, I've had this discussion with numerous cancer warriors, and that is, to have, you know, a time limit given, and how damaging it can be. For some people, it kind of gets them going and gets them on their healing journey and gets them taking control of as much as they can. What made you decide to go to a few oncologists? And I'm stressing this because a lot of people hesitate when it comes to getting second opinions.
So I think when it comes to oncology, I think it's very important to get a second opinion. And you also need to have a match with your doctor. So the first oncologist I went to had these beautiful rooms, massive fish tank, you know, very show-offy. I don't know how to say it. And when I landed up at my third oncologist, he probably had the worst rooms out of everybody, but he had so much love to give. And I knew immediately. I actually turned around to my dad within about 5 minutes and I said, this is where I'm going to go. My doctor, if I called him at 3 a.m., he would answer the phone. If I had to be admitted into hospital, he was there. He was always hands on. And to this day, he's now 80 years old and he's still my doctor. And I trust him with my life, like absolutely. Wow. So I think you really have to have a good connection. What I really do hate is that a lot of people see oncologists, and I think it's a little bit like a meat market. So you go in for chemo or immunotherapy, and the next person shipped in behind you, and you don't have time to just absorb that you just had this really stressful treatment and you're feeling extremely ill, but now someone else needs your seat. And that's not what happened with my oncologist. So I've always praised him. I absolutely adore him. And it's become like a little family, actually. I mean, my first nurse that dealt with me at my doctor, she's still my nurse. So that's 19 years later. And I mean, I've seen her children grow up, which is quite amazing. So it's like, it's a complete family. And it's, but also I find another issue is when people, so after 8 years, I didn't have to do chemo and I had an op instead. And then my cancer came back. But I've seen a lot of people, they become very reliant on the doctors and the nurses being their family and the patients. And that's why I actually really gravitated to the DL Link, because they help you and they assist you. There's counseling if you need lifts to your cancer sessions, if you need meals, they're there. And I would say they're the best group I've actually ever come across.
I mean, you've been doing this for quite a long time, Alexis.
Yeah, and I've been part of other groups, but I really, the DL Link is probably the, I find it amazing.
Listen, I want to come back to how you came into contact with the DL Link, but before we get there, I just want to go back to these round about 15 different types of chemos over a period of 8 years, where, as you said, the body, it stops working and then you've got to move to another kind of chemotherapy. Now, I wonder how many people listening right now, you are thinking, how in God's name did you do it? You know, when someone has to go for one round of chemotherapy, it is harrowing. For you to try 15 different types over a period of 8 years, what did it do to you? What did it do to you emotionally? What did it do to you physically? And in this time, you obtained 3 degrees. So when I started off and I spoke and I said, you know, this, there's such an inspirational story. It's so much about grit and resilience and determination. How did you navigate 8 years of chemo?
So the one thing I realized when I started chemo, I had all these hopes and dreams, you know, like a 5-year plan. I mean, I was convinced I was going to be the CEO of Investec. But, you know, the thing is, then slowly things happen where, you know, you can't plan 5 years in advance and you realize you can't plan a year in advance. So what my family did with me was we went day by day. And as long as I got up the next day, it was fantastic. But I didn't make long-term goals. But I did know that I wanted to be better. And even if I had not survived, I had to stay on that course of studying, pushing along, trying to work. And it's tough. I really feel for the chemo patients that have to continue working and they don't have a choice. I was still young and I was in the position that my parents were still paying for my medical aid, for my living. But it's very, very hard. And I've seen chemo patients that they come to chemo and then they need to leave immediately afterwards to go back to their job. Because if they don't go, they're not getting any money that month. It's quite frightening. And I don't think there's enough support for these people that don't have those type of jobs where they can be booked or for a month. So I think you just have to go step by step and you can't put too much pressure on yourself. But I think chemo patients, especially cancer patients, are very hard on themselves. And they feel that in the work environment, they need to work way harder than the average person just to prove that they're worthy of being in that environment. Because that's how I think cancer has this terrible stigma that you shouldn't be able to work, that you'll be useless, futile to the actual environment, and you may as well just bugger off. So I think it's very important that the right support systems are put into place for all types of chemo patients.
I think that's so true. Was this around what time did you, during this journey, did you get into contact with the DL Link? Because we're talking about support during chemo. You're talking about at work. But, I mean, you know, the DL Link is all about this kind of support. So at what stage did you get into contact with them?
So it was actually only about 2 months ago. So my friend, it was a terrible tragedy in the family. And I ended up going to Sandringham Gardens for the shul. And I met this amazing lady called Olga May. And she's part of the DL Link. And my friend had actually been trying for ages for me to actually meet Olga May. And we started chatting, and I was saying to her, you know, do something simple, like don't read a book, rather listen to audiobooks. Because you know, you start getting this chemo brain, and then you can't remember the first sentence, and you just start to feel silly. So I was giving her all this advice, and she said, I really, really want you to go to the DL Link. And I was very keen. Actually, I just loved Olga May. She's such a lovely person. And I ended up contacting the DL Link, and they were amazing, like absolutely amazing. And as I said, I've been part of other groups before, but the DL Link is honestly the best thing that I've ever come across. Just the support, the love, the care, just a complete holistic approach to cancer patients.
I'm so delighted that you came across him. I'm sorry it was only 2 months ago, but rather now than never, Alexis, because your journey continues. Tell us now. I know, well, tell us where you are right now. So you've got this fantastic job, you've got people in the company who support you, you carry on, you mentioned you had more surgery, you were talking about kidney surgery, you were talking about for your ovaries. So this has been a pretty challenging journey. I know that also you had tongue cancer, which was completely unrelated. Yes, so where do you stand now?
So in 2020, during COVID, I found out that I had tongue cancer, and I was actually in Plettenberg Bay. And there was a surgeon there, and he shaved this piece off my tongue. And I ended up speaking to my maxillofacial surgeon, and he said, no, you've got to come back. So it was quite a mission. I think it took us 24 hours to drive from Plettenberg Bay to Johannesburg, because they had all those stops where they checked your temperature and all of that. And I ended up actually losing about a quarter of my tongue and having all the nodules cut out of my neck. And if I hadn't phoned my doctor, I think I would have actually lost my tongue. And so I was really lucky. And then about 2 years later, so it was 2022, I didn't actually feel that sick. Usually I feel quite ill when a new tumor appears, but I wasn't really that ill. And I ended up losing my left kidney to the same cancer, not to the tongue cancer, to the liver cancer. And that's when we decided, okay, it's time to go on to immunotherapy. And immunotherapy is quite a new thing in South Africa. And I don't know that much about it, but there are a few different types. I take something called Keytruda, and it works really well. Like the downtime isn't as bad. And I've got a good friend that often takes me to immunotherapy, and then he drops me off at home and makes sure I'm okay. But it's nothing like chemotherapy. Chemotherapy is very hard.
Wow. So this immunotherapy, is this for everything? Does this just keep your immune system working, fighting anything that comes up? Is it more of, because you're over. I mean, your tongue cancer is behind you. Having part of your kidney removed is behind you. Like what is your current state besides being on the immunotherapy?
So the interesting thing about immunotherapy, I think the name is a bit misleading. So everyone thinks it's like an immune booster, but it's not. So with chemotherapy, what happens is you get that drip or a pill or an injection, and it targets the entire body. So it eradicates the good cells, it eradicates the bad cells, and that's why your hair also ends up falling out. With immunotherapy, it knows where the cancer is. So it doesn't matter if your cancer is in the groin, if it's in your leg, it only targets the cancer. So it doesn't end up eradicating the really good cells in your body. That's what makes it so much better. But unfortunately, over time, so I'm in my second year, it does get a bit worse. But what happened was I had another tumor that had spread to the right side of my body, and that's why we did the immunotherapy. And my doctor said that he hopes that, well, the immunotherapy is working, but he hopes that this will actually stop any cancer in the future. Unfortunately, if I get something like breast cancer, it won't work, but for the particular liver cancer. So I'm hoping that it's the end soon and I can just carry on, but I'm positive about it. Like it doesn't, for me, as I said, like I've had this for half my life, so I don't really know another path.
Yes, and you talk about the different cancers quite matter-of-factly. I mean, it's, as you say, it's part of your life. So the question then, Alexis, is how do you stay positive? I mean, you said you had to reevaluate things. You know, you don't plan 5 years ahead or you don't do this. Sounds like you've got such an amazing close family and group of friends. And now, as you say, the DL Link. But when you wake up in the morning, you know, and you, there's that fear. I mean, people talk about this. Is it going to come up again? What's going to happen? What is in the future? How do you manage that?
Well, the thing is, it's out of your control. So you can't be cross with your body because suddenly a new tumor has popped up, or you're just having a bad day and you feel exhausted. But I really take my hat off to all chemo patients, because it's quite, chemotherapy is frightening. It really is. And it's not the thought of it even. The physical issues that pop up, the emotional strain, it's very, very hard. But I think I would just go to my friends, and if I wanted to have a cry for 10 minutes or 2 hours, they would sit with me. And sometimes I think I wasn't even on the same planet as them, because it also affects you. Like psychologically, there's a lot that changes and you don't have any control over it. It's not as though you can pop a pill and you'll feel better. So I've had really hard days, I must tell you, but the most important thing I did was I said, I'm going to live my life. If I want to go out and see my friends, I'm going to go out. If I'm going to go to someone's house, it will be okay. And my friends, they didn't care if I rocked up in socks and pajamas. Like, just as long as I was happy to be around them. But I just kept pushing. Also, I think people are so focused on things like hair loss, and they don't feel good about themselves. But honestly, no one cares. No one's going to say, oh, my goodness, did you see she has no hair? You know, it's not like a big speaking point. You just have to hold your head up high, and you have to go. And if you want to wear a wig, that's fine. If you want to wear a bandana, that's fine. You just have to be you. And I used to walk through Sandton City with my mother with no shoes on, because my feet were so swollen that nothing fitted me. So you just, and of course people stare, but you just have to carry on and just, it's your fight. Don't worry about these people on the sidelines that have to look and stare. You just have to carry on and just surround yourself with good people. You can't have people that are negative around you. But I think I'm also the eternal optimist.
Goes a long way, Alexis, because your attitude is amazing. Amazing.
Yeah. And I think it also comes down, being an eternal optimist, it affects a lot of things. So you will bump into someone that's discussing the economy and how the world's falling apart, but I'm on top of the world saying, no, you're here right now, accept what we're doing and we'll all move along. But so some people will disagree with my attitude, but that's what saved me.
Yeah. And talking about that, so the focus is looking, doing the reframe and looking for the positive in what could be a very challenging situation.
And I also say to people, and I'm guilty of it, but people doing this Dr. Google stuff where you find that you're going on to this treatment and now you go Google it and then you see what the worst side effects are and the rare side effects, and now you're already freaking out. You haven't even started the treatment and you think your whole hand's going to blow up or something ridiculous, and it just doesn't happen. And the thing is, I think you can actually make yourself sick by reading and trying to get all this knowledge via Google, where it's something that was tested on a rat maybe 5 years ago, and that's how the rat functioned afterwards. But there's so many things that can fix it. The doctors know, like if you're suffering from the severe itchiness where you can't sleep, they can give you special medication for that, and they can assist you. So you really have to be kind on yourself. And I've gone through periods where I don't think I was very kind to myself. It was extremely hard. When I look back, I think, oh, my gosh, look how far you've come. I used to weigh 39 kilos when I was like a stick. And I think you just have to, you just need to keep on pushing. And I know it sounds hard for some people, but honestly, got to try to get up in the morning, even if you just sit up and you go sit outside in your garden chair and have a little nap or something. Just also, I find getting in touch with nature. So you can't lock yourself up in a house all day long. You need to go out and get like fresh air, even if it's just in your driveway.
Yeah. Alexa, so many gems that you've shared with us today. And I think you've inspired so many people who are listening right now, maybe who tuned in at the beginning of the show. Maybe they're having a bad day and maybe their treatment isn't going too well. Yeah, you certainly have readjusted, I think, many attitudes. So thanks, Alexis. Thank you for being so amazing, for coming onto the show and sharing your story. And we just wish you good health and vitality. And we look so forward to chatting to you again when you, you know, yeah, give us an update on how you are. And all the best with this new job. Really lovely chatting.
Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it. And I just want to help people. I mean, if anyone wants to speak to me, they know they can call me. I don't care if it's 2 a.m. They can call and I will help them through it.
You are an absolute darling. And you are connected with the DL Link. And if anyone who is listening and they want to make contact with you, they can contact Alexis Kalyani. I hope I pronounced that correctly.
That's actually
the Greek way. You can just speak to the DL Link and they will give you Alexis's detail. Alexis, thank you so much. God bless. Take care. Good health. And I'm sure we'll chat again soon.
Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. Bye,
thank
Alexis.
You. Bye.
Alexis Kalyani, I started off and I said, wow, what a story. This is a story, you know, being diagnosed in 2006 and still continuing with all sorts of treatment and surgery and, yeah, the 8 years of chemotherapy, now 2 years of immunotherapy. And this beautiful woman has 3 degrees. She wakes up every day and she looks for the things to be excited about. And that is a wonderful adjustment of my attitude in this moment right now. I'm very grateful to Alexis and her story.